श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जाय, संकीर्तन यज्ञ की जाय। इतवाई ग्रज भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जाय, इस्कॉन गुरु वृंद की जाय, समवेत भक्त वृंद की जाय। ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरिस टू श्री गुरु श्री गौरंग।
He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He's my Lord, Lord, and Lord. From his treasure, by him, I use his knowledge. Our spiritual master is the ocean of mercy. Gopijana Balaba Girivada Dari Gopijana Balaba
Girivardhanadi. Yashodhanandana Vrajajanarandana Yashodhanandana Vrajajanarandana Yamunatira Vanachari Yamuna tira vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janabalabha Girivadadari Gopi Janabalabha Girivadadari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Pada Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Sri Srimadis Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai Glories to the assembled devotees. Well, it's good to see so many happy, smiling, new, fresh faces. What's the occasion? It can't just be because it's Saturday. What happened? Sabbatical something or Saturday feast? No? If they were just here for the Saturday feast, then they'd come in about 45 minutes. So what is it today? Is it something new? It's my class, okay. Well, obviously. That's why everybody's here. Not for Krishna, but for me. I understood. So we welcome you all for whatever reason you have come, from wherever you have come. I think we have a whole family from Swindon. Thank you for coming. Namaste to you. Then we have people from come all the way from Harrow. Welcome to you. Welcome to the devotees of Pandavasena who got up early enough
to come
on a Saturday. So this is the class we have every Saturday morning, and this is the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's not the Srimad Bhagavatam class. It's the Chaitanya Charitamrita class. And we start the Chaitanya Charitamrita class with also the additional Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. That's the easy part. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gora Bhaktivrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Today is also a special day. It is also the birthday, somebody's birthday today. It is the birthday of Srila Vyasadeva, traditionally, Guru Purnima. So for him, and also for Sanatan Goswami, whose Tirubhav, his disappearance day, is today, we say the following mantra. Please place your hands together. I'll teach you a very special mantra. Okay. Now you all smiled when I said this is a special mantra. Don't think that a mantra that you chant every day isn't special just because you chant it every day. You can't make that mantra mundane just because you own it, just because you possess it. Just, it doesn't become yours. It doesn't become yours. If you think this is a mantra that I use every day, that's the wrong conception. A dishcloth is something you use every day. Your trousers is something that you use every day. The mantra uses us. The mantra uses us. That's the attitude. Now, this I don't think, I think the ladies can see. Yes, very nicely. So we have some very God-conscious brahmacharis who've set it up, but I think that all the men can't see. Am I right? So it needs to just be a little angle. It needs to be back a little bit more. If it goes back about 3 feet, then, and twist slightly. Ladies, can you still see? Men, can you see now? Now we're happy. All right. Huh? A table for the computer. No, we haven't gone that far. Yeah. We're not that far into Kali Yuga yet. In the future of Kali Yuga, people will be getting initiated by Sri Googlepad. And all you have to do is touch his feet, and the whole mysteries of the universe open up to you. That's how we gain information. But we're not that far into Kali Yuga. Otherwise we can have a Vyasasan for my laptop. You're right. That makes sense. So this is, we're continuing on the 8th chapter of the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a nice chapter. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his commentary on this chapter, is Amrita Prabha Bhasha. He says that this chapter is about glorification of Chaitanya and Nityananda. It's also about warning devotees that they should understand that the way to chant the holy name with purity, not only to follow the 10 restrictions or to make sure they don't commit the 10 offenses, we all know those, because those 10 offenses will reduce the potency of the connection between you and the holy name of Krishna. These 10 offenses aren't just something for reciting in the morning, therefore keeping within your brain all day, because we all do all 10 of them. Don't think, well, not me. It's a standard operating procedure. So therefore, avoidance of the 10 offenses to the holy name gives us the Shuddhanam, or the pure chanting of the holy name, which is what will help us greatly. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, make sure you follow these, avoid these 10 offenses. Then he says, he's commenting on Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who says, rather unusually for a very gentle 91-year-old man who's almost blind and sitting writing in complete tranquility on the banks of Radhakund, and having been blessed by every single devotee in Vrindavan and begged to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he's sitting there and he's writing words such as, those who don't understand the position of Chaitanya Nityananda, they are demons. Well, what happened? Did he get up the wrong side of the bed that morning, or is this just he was a particular mood? No, this is something he's conveying not only to us but to the future generations, who will have a tendency not to understand the position of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's very easy not to do that, because it goes along with not understanding the position of the Guru. Anything that looks mundane, the mundane mind in mundane consciousness will automatically relegate that to being mundane. So, my Guru is just a human being. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a human being. Probably Krishna was a mythological figure who history has pumped up, a little bit more. Maybe there was two Krishnas, we don't know. One in Dwarka, one in Vrindavan, we don't know. Maybe Krishna never appeared at all. And in this way, I will go on enjoying my life. So these are the different arguments that come up. And in this chapter, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, don't do that. Don't do that. Because if you do that, pretty much all is lost. If you allow these things to come in. And then he has a go at people who manifest the symptoms of the different symptoms of ecstasy prematurely. He talks about them as well, because this is a common thing in the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If it was a common thing in the time of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, you can bet that he would have written about it. The whole thing is the Guru gives tattva, and he also gives virodhi tattva. Virodhi means the obstacles that lie in the path of you understanding the tattva. So if the Guru doesn't give you warnings, then he's not doing his job. Your job as a disciple is to learn. The Guru's job is to teach. And part of teaching is to tell you, do this, do this, do this. But his job is also, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Otherwise it becomes a mutual appreciation society with mutual flattery between Guru and disciple. Guru, Prabhupada said, yes, reduce the volume in the corridor. People love to come to Bhaktivedanta Manor and socialize. So, if the Guru, his job is to... One time they said to Prabhupada, what is the difference between a book and the Guru? I can just pick up the book and read. Why do I need the Guru to tell me? Said Prabhupada, the Guru cannot do this. Prabhupada said that. The Guru cannot take you by the ear. This is the job of the Guru. He's not just an information box. He's not just a spiritual world tourist information guide. Could you tell me how to get to, second on the left, third on the right, and you'll be there. That's not the Guru's function. The Guru's function is to, yes, tell you that, but also help you along the way and make sure you don't make the mistakes that he absolutely knows that you're going to make. So he gives instruction, but then he also gives he works in the stupidity factor. And the stupidity factor is that don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Then there's well-balanced guidance. Okay, I'm already giving the class before we've got to the verse. So let us chant this verse. What number is it? 74? 78. Oh, joy. When I visited the temple, this is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami speaking about how he was empowered to write this book. When I visited the temple of Madan Mohan, you can say it with me just to stay awake. He's telling us here about a historical incident. Who's Gosai Das? Is he in the parampara? Does he occur anywhere else in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita? No. But he just wants to tell you, on that particular day, Gosai Das was serving the deity. So he's putting us in the context here, somewhere in the early 1600s. Okay? And he's saying, on that day I went to the temple, Gosai Das was serving the deities, and please listen, because this is what happened. Okay. This verse. Actually, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is not my writing, but the dictation of Sri Madan Mohan. My writing is like the repetition of a parrot. Purport. This should be the attitude of all devotees. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead recognizes a devotee, he gives him intelligence and dictates how he may go back home, back to Godhead. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satata yuktanam vajitam priti purvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Bhagavad Gita 10:10. The opportunity to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord is open to everyone, because every living entity is constitutionally a servant of the Lord. To engage in the service of the Lord is the natural function of the living entity. But because he is covered by the influence of Maya, material energy, he thinks it to be a very difficult task. But if he places himself under the guidance of a spiritual master and does everything sincerely, immediately the Lord, who is situated within everyone's heart, dictates how to serve him. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. The Lord gives this direction, and thus the devotee's life becomes perfect. Whatever a pure devotee does is done by the dictation of the Supreme Lord. Thus it is confirmed by the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita that whatever he wrote was written under the direction of the Sri Madan Mohan deity. Oma Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. It is very difficult in life to put yourself under the guidance of anybody else. We don't tend to have those relationships very much in this world. They're very common in the East. They're very common in China, Japan, India, of course. But as soon as the more west you come, this type of relationship with a teacher who will correct you as your personal guide, you only really get that, you get it in Oxford University to a certain extent, you get it in the armed forces to a certain extent. I remember there was a group of Chinese acrobats who came to London, and they asked them what the secret was of their intensely complicated acrobatics. And one of them answered, "If we don't get it right, our teacher hits us." And I had a friend who went to a monastery in Japan, and he was there for 18 months. This is before he became a devotee. He's now a sannyasi. But he said if they didn't get the meditation right, the teacher would come round with a bamboo stick and hit them. You do that now, and immediately, your guru hits you with a stick. And police, social services, everyone comes. Now, even the guru said something or looked at me the wrong way, then I think I've made the wrong choice, you see. But that happens in all areas of life. I married this woman, and now she's a bit of a disappointment to me, and we've been married such a long time. I mean, 18 months, you know, we've been married for a long, long 18 months. It's not working out, okay? That's like the caterpillar gets all worked up and makes a commitment, an internal commitment, to become a butterfly. And then he's hanging there as a chrysalis, and he's thinking, you know what? I've had enough. This is really uncomfortable. I don't want to stay here anymore. I mean, they told me that if I did this, I'd become a butterfly, right? Do I look like a butterfly? I'm really just a caterpillar hanging upside down. I mean, hanging upside down, that's a stupid idea. At least as a butterfly, I'd be able to fly, and as a caterpillar, I could walk. But this is stupid. This is just a gross violation of my human rights, or my caterpillar rights. So yes, when the guru says, you are my disciple, your name is such and such Das, don't forget, we like the other side of the name, don't we? We like the Krishna Das or the Govinda Das or Dasi. We like that part of the name. But we forget that the other part of the name, when translated from standard Sanskrit into standard English, sometimes it's translated as servant. And sometimes it's translated as slave. Now, we abolished slavery a long time ago. William Wilberforce in the late 1860s, he said slavery is not a good thing. Any place where one human being is put at the service of another human being without remuneration, this is slavery. You see? So this is not looking good for the guru and disciple relationship, is it? So what we need really is a really modified guru-disciple relationship that's fit for the 21st century, where the guru is kind of a chum. He's more like a chum. He's more sort of friendly. He never says anything that corrects me. He never offers me any rebuke. He never looks at me in a way that isn't filled with love and affection. That's the type of guru I'm looking for. You see. Then when you find that guru, then you've found a proper guru, you see. Well, this is 21st century thinking, unfortunately, because that's not what a guru is. It's like saying, you know what? I've had enough of these curved bananas. I'm finished with these curved bananas. I mean, it just doesn't fit into my lunchbox. I want a straight banana. I don't want a curved one. I mean, why do they have to curve anyway? What's the point of a curved banana? Because in my life, most things come from a factory. Okay? In my life, most things come from a factory. And it's all uniform shape, uniform size. And unfortunately, you should see the mountains of vegetables and the mountains of bananas that get thrown away because they're the wrong size. Or they have a little bit of dirt on them. Because people think that fruit and vegetables should also be of uniform color and uniform taste and of uniform quality. So we throw away a lot of things which are actually natural in production. See, the thing is that if you want something which is natural, you have to take it the way it comes. So if you want the guru and disciple relationship that's being recommended here, you have to take the guru the way the guru comes, not the way you would prefer him to be. You see? And that's the difficulty. But it's not just a 21st century problem. It's not just a 20th century problem. It was also a 19th century problem, because Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he said the main problem is that, he said, a man will tolerate so many things from his daughter. His daughter will shout at him. And the daughter sometimes becomes very angry with her father. So she shouts at the father. And the father will just tolerate because of love. He said, but if the guru just once shouts at the disciple, then the disciple will be gone forever. This is Gaurakishore Das Babaji speaking. So the guru just shouts just once. And he's gone forever. He'll never come back. So, Das means servant, and that means that you will be shouted at. And if you're not shouted at, then that means, you know, you don't get the full benefit of having a guru. You get the benefit of having a spiritual friend. But a spiritual friend is not the same as having a guru. It's a different personality. Anyway, whether your guru shouts at you or not, that's not my business, okay? But I'm just saying that the guru will sometimes say things. And the quality of Prabhupada is that he shouted at us. He shouted at us. And pretty much from the time I first met Prabhupada all the way through to when he passed away, it was, you are just fools, rascals. You don't know how to do anything. You nonsense. But I'm still here. I'm still here. And a lot of the Prabhupada disciples who got shouted at like that, they're still here. Why? Because that's what we need. We actually need it. If you go to the doctor and you say to the doctor, you know, I've got a real problem. I've got this and that. And you describe the symptoms. And the doctor says, okay, would you like a cup of tea? Would you like two sugars? Yeah, is that okay? And I'll read you a story, shall I? Let me tell you the story. He tells you a story. He says, is that okay? Okay, we've had a nice chat, I think. I think I've been friendly. Okay, you've had a cup of tea. He's not being a doctor. Doctor means that he does what doctors do. He says, you've got to give up something. You've got to give up this, and you've got to take these nasty tasting medicines 3 times a day. So the doctor immediately regulates our life, adds something to our life, and takes something away. That's what happens. So the relationship between Prabhupada and his disciples was like that. Prabhupada was extremely critical. I mean, we gave him a lot to be critical of, you know. But we have to look for that. The tendency now is that, well, if my guru wants to criticize me, he can criticize me, but no one else. I'm only the servant of my guru, but I'm not the servant of anybody else. Well, that's why Prabhupada put a person in place called the temple president, because he presides, and he tells you what to do. Or the temple commander. Why is he called the temple commander? Not just because he emptied the bins. It's not just a way of making him feel good about being the person who empties the bins. Temple commander commands. He says, you, go and empty the bins. And you can't say, oh, that's not my service, I'm chanting my rounds. That's not what life in the ashram is. I hope I'm putting all you boys off from leaving the ashram. They go, okay, if that's what it's like, I'm going to university. But if everybody goes to university, then where is the Hare Krishna movement? If everybody goes to university, where is the Hare Krishna movement? And the few people in the ashram. Few people, and everybody in the ashram, they're the ones who couldn't get into university. Then what should we do? Huh? Then what sort of a future will we have? So we have the chief decision makers of the entire Hare Krishna movement, all men who could not go to university, even if they tried. And all the really intelligent ones who have no input, they're outside. That's not very good. So then we have to make the outside the inside, and the inside the outside. And there's various ways that different social institutions and religious institutions do that, with varying degrees of success. But the core of any religious endeavor, any mission to satisfy the guru, is complete and utter dedication. Now, part of that dedication is to not simply imitate the guru, as we've been hearing in this chapter, but to follow the guru. Imitating the guru is called anukaran, and following the guru is called anusharan. And Prabhupada tells a story of a Brahmin with 2 spoons. And Prabhupada gives the spoons names, Kushit and Kushu. And if you're Bengali, you know this, the 2 fish-shaped spoons, Kushit and Kushu. So you take these fish-shaped spoons and you do your puja down by the river. But this Brahmin was very influential, and when he went down to the Ganga, he took his 2 spoons. Then the very next day, he saw that all the other Brahmins had purchased in identical spoons from the same shop. So he came out of the water and he couldn't see where his spoons were, because there were so many spoons there. So then the next day when he went down to the water, he rolled 2 little balls of Ganges mud. And he said, if I put these two little balls and the 2 spoons, when I get out of the water, I'll know which are my spoons and which is all the other Brahmins. But he forgot that he was a very influential Brahmin. So when he came out of the water, he saw that he saw that all the spoons were filled with little clay balls. Anyway, Prabhupada laughed at the story. So, So he became a victim of Anukaran rather than Anusharan. Everybody was copying him. So what is the difference? Well, sometimes you can adopt the you can take inspiration to behave in a certain way from the way that the guru behaved, but sometimes you cannot. The instructions are more important than the example in terms of how you do your own following. And so there are many warnings about trying to imitate the guru rather than to follow his instructions. Imitation is always easier. To imitate an advanced person is easier than following an advanced person, because the first thing you have to do when you're following an advanced person is to admit to yourself and others that you're not advanced. So the general tendency that comes, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is that the young student, the young disciple, will do what is known as a utsaha mayi. Utsaha mayi means that it's the illusion of enthusiasm. He's so enthusiastic that he starts thinking that now I've understood everything. And then he understands a little bit more Taranga Rangini. He starts enjoying a little bit of what comes from the guru's instructions, but then he thinks that he's understood everything. So normally a neophyte disciple keeps interrupting their spiritual life, and that leads to pain. Because when you interrupt your spiritual life, you become lax in your practices, and then something happens to force you back on track. But to be forced back on track either means that you develop a philosophy to excuse what you're doing, or you lose your taste and you become dry. And then the next thing you do is to remove yourself from the association of enthusiastic devotees because they're making you look unenthusiastic. So all these things are standard practices. They're kind of standard things that happen. So therefore, the association of devotees, preferably ones who are more enthusiastic than you, preferably ones who say, hey, you're not, why are you doing that? Why aren't you doing that? That's not proper behavior. In life, you would not choose friends like that. In real life, you wouldn't hang out with friends who said, hey, why are you always coming here looking like that? You should do this. You should wear tea like. You should dress like this. You shouldn't, grow your hair like this. You should do this. Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? You wouldn't choose those sort of friends. But in spiritual life, if you choose those sort of friends, you get the benefit of being kept on track. It's quite simple. But that requires an inner commitment to do that. It requires a little austerity to do that, a little tapasya. But the results are that you make progress. One time, Gaurakishore Das Babaji was sitting by the river chanting, and a man set up just down the river bank from him, and he dressed like him. He looked like him. He had the same demeanor as him. And he looked at him and he thought, this man is actually copying me. And later on, when the man went away, Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, he said, yes, if a woman goes into a hospital and she starts making the sounds of labor, that she's delivering a baby, but she's not even pregnant, he said, this is a form of madness. He said, so similarly, if a man comes and he wants to make the sounds and the behavior of a man who's in love with God, but he hasn't actually developed that far, this is a form of madness. So jumping ahead, in the Christian church, they have something called antinomianism, which means it's a sort of understanding that you've gone so far ahead being blessed by God that now you don't have to follow the rules. And when C.S. Lewis wrote about that, he says that it's the point at which your imagination exceeds your obedience. First comes obedience. Don't imagine things. Don't imagine things and don't make stuff up. That's a pretty good rule. So then Bhaktivinod Thakur said, he said, yes, it's like a, is it like a green mango? He said, the green mango, it's green, but it is a mango. But there's no sugar. It's not sweet. He said, so we all have a relationship with God, but it's not yet ripe. He said, if you pick the green mango and eat it, you'll just get a mouthful of bitterness. So there's a time. There's a time. Which means you have to do sadhana bhakti, and then you'll experience the sweetness. You see? And then when that sweetness is there, then all kinds of things can happen. You see? But one of the difficulties of being a movement like ours, which preaches to so many people, is that you get huge masses of people who sometimes make things up. And sometimes there's movements within the movement. You know, you have a movement is like a river, but sometimes you'll get a swirl or a whirlpool or, you know, a little diverted channel. So in a movement of devotion started by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Kijai, you will often get little movements. And so we'll go on for a few more months, and then someone will start something over here. They want to dress in a particular way, sing a particular, read a particular book, wear a particular t-shirt. And then, you know, people will have to say, excuse me, boys and girls, it's not like that, it's like this. But then the persons who are deputed to say, excuse me, they get criticized because why are you always criticizing? It's not your position. Well, it is their position to criticize. Someone's got to say, this is incorrect. Someone's got to say it. But whoever says it gets labeled as being restrictive, conservative, out of touch with the realities of life, out of touch, usually they're old, out of touch with young people, you see. So it's a problem. But it's a perennial problem, and it's not just our problem, it's everybody's problem, because it's a human problem. But in this particular chapter, Bhaktivinoda Thakura is bringing that out. However, we also have the results of going through that stage and coming to the conclusion. And the results of coming to the conclusion, as the Sri Ishupanishad Mantra 6 says, Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani eva nupashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato na vijagupsate. Wonderful book, Sri Ishupanishad. It says that for that person who sees everything in relation to God, you see, who sees God in everything and everything connected to God, that person can never hate anyone. There's a, you know, turn on the news any night this week and it's just about mutual hatred. This one throwing rockets at this one throwing rockets at that one. Okay. Just in this one verse is the solution to peace. Peace in the Middle East, peace in the Far East, peace in the Middle West, peace in the Far West. The peace is to actually come into the presence of God. Because when you actually come into the presence of God, not just your mental conception of God, because your mental conception of God is firmly stuck in the mode of ignorance, passion, or maybe a little bit of goodness. But as soon as you're in the upper reaches of goodness, you will start loving people. Guaranteed. You will start seeing people with the eyes of love. You can't help it. Because the closer you get to God, it's like, I have a fire in my house. The closer I get to the fire, the warmer I get. I don't have to do anything to make the sweat come off my brow. I just have to get a little bit closer to the fire, and that happens automatically. I become red in the face, and the sweat comes. I'm not artificially becoming flushed. I'm not artificially manifesting sweat. So the pure devotee is not artificially manifesting shivers and manifesting tears. He's doing it because he's getting close to the source of all love. So he's feeling that. So what happens is that then you start loving everybody because, yes, tu sarvani bhutani. Sarvani bhutani, every living being. Whether they're wearing a turban or whether they're wearing a kippah or whether they're wearing a... whatever they're wearing, whatever shape building they worship in, sarva bhutani, yes tu sarvani bhutani. You see them as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And therefore you can't even think. You can't even think of hurting them. So therefore, one who comes close to Krishna is automatically graced by Krishna. And things start happening. But can we expect something like that in our life? You know, it's all very well, Kripa Moya, you're making me a bit miserable because you talked about pure devotional service and how someone's going to shout at me for the next 20 years until I get a bit purified. Well, no, it's not quite like that. And a lot of people will love you because if you hang out with the right devotees, they will give you great affection. But here's the thing. Be prepared for someone to correct you. And make it easy on yourself. The more you're open for correction, the more you will walk on the path to Krishna. It's easy. That's what it means to walk the path of a disciple. It doesn't really matter whether you're initiated and you've got the Das name or the Govinda name or this or that. That's just one. It's like a milestone along that path. But the path is the same for everybody. That's the bad news. Initiated, non-initiated, second, first, this one, that one. It doesn't really matter. The path is the same for everyone. You're on Krishna's path now. And it will be difficult to get off. So make life easy. Life will be easy if you say, my dear Lord, okay, here I am. Last lifetime, I really screwed up. That's why I'm here. Next lifetime, I don't even know about that one. But this life, okay, avasya rakshibe Krishna. From this point onwards, you look after me. And see what happens. So here's Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and he's going and he's being graced by the deities. I've heard of people going in front of the deities and just making that one prayer. Oh, please help. I really, really need your help. And Krishna reciprocates. Krishna can't fail to reciprocate. He loves his devotees. And he's looking for an excuse. He's looking for what they call a upaya. He's looking for an excuse. This is what they say in the Sri Vaishnavas. They say that Krishna wants to give you everything, but he's looking for an excuse. Your devotion to him is not the reason. You know, your service to him and your prayer to him is not the reason why he blesses you. Because that would be that you could make God do something for you. You can't. You can't pray in any way that would make Krishna bless you. You can't do any level of devotional service that would force Krishna to do something for you. But Krishna uses your prayer, uses your service as an excuse. Ah, give it to him. I wanted to give it to him anyway, but now this is how I reciprocate. Somebody was telling me of a middle-aged Jewish gentleman who lived on a kibbutz. It's a farm, a communal farm in Israel, of course. And he came to, somehow the devotees, he was a friend of a friend of a friend of a devotee. And he came, and he'd never seen deities before of any kind. And he came to Vrindavan, and the curtains opened, and he saw Krishna and Balaram. This is someone who was in his 40s. And he said that internally, I must have been prepared, or I must have made a prayer to my God. So he was making a prayer to the Jewish God that he wouldn't be, you know, that this would be some kind of experience that would help him. Anyway, it turns out that the Jewish God is also the Krishna God, and when the curtains opened, he just couldn't stop crying. He was just weeping, and it was a total transformation. And he came away from the deity darshan, and he said, I just don't know what happened. What just happened to me? And of course now he's a, you know, devotee just like us. And total transformation. There was another devotee who was, it was also Vrindavan actually, it's another Vrindavan story. He came all the way from New York. He was a devotee who was, in New York there's a group of devotees who make donuts, the donut plant. And early on in the history of the donut plant, because he was always looking for recipes, you know, newer and newer recipes. So he came in front of the deities, and as he was praying to Krishna and Balaram, he saw a recipe. He saw a recipe. I mean, different people see different things when they come in front of the deities. He saw a recipe. And then he came away from the darshan extremely excited, because he came away and wrote it down. He wrote it down, and when he went back home to New York, that became his big selling recipe. And just people were queuing up, and they haven't stopped queuing up ever since. So he got what he wanted. He got what he wanted from Krishna. And that was Krishna's personally reciprocating with him in an act of creation. So when you want to write a book, you have to get the blessings of the Lord. So here's Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and he's going to Radha Madan Mohan. And he's blind, practically. He can hardly see the deities. Almost blind. And it's absolutely amazing. If you strip away all our expectations that these were all supermen and they could do everything, and just understand, he was almost blind. Almost blind. He's 91. And all the way through Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's perfect. It's written in perfect poetry. How is that possible? It's written in perfect poetry. Da 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 da. And it sounds a very simple thing to do. But that's why a rap artist gets paid an awful lot of money to make the syllables fit and the syllables rhyme. And someone who can do that gets paid a lot of money because it's difficult. But here we have thousands of verses all the way through. I mean, talking about, you know, he was a voice artist. How is that possible that all the way through this book, everything's in perfect meter and rhyme? And he says exactly what he wants to say so that it uplifts every person who reads it. Every person who reads Chaitanya Charitamrita finds that the book, like the deity who pretty much commissioned the book through the mouths of the Vaishnavas, and then Madan Mohan blessed him. Now, here's the difficulty. Every time something falls off the deities, does that mean something? No. Because things fall quite a lot in the pujari room, let me tell you. If you're Brahmin initiated and you've been in the pujari room and you've been on the altar, you know that things drop, things fall. So every time someone drops a plate, you know, does that mean you have to run screaming out of the temple room going, "It's a sign, confirmed"? Okay. You may have come with a very, you know, you may come thinking, "Oh, I really want to have three wives. I really think that that's what Krishna would want me to do." I mean, it works for people who worship Allah, and if Allah is Krishna, then maybe Krishna will be a little more, because after all, Krishna had 16,108, so what's wrong in having four wives? So you come to the temple and you're thinking, "Let me have four wives," and someone drops a plate, and you go, "Confirmed, confirmed." I don't think so. There has to be an integration of these things. You have to have a prayer that is pretty much a pure devotional prayer. Someone came in front of Prabhupada one time and he said, "Prabhupada, I'd like to have a second wife." And Prabhupada said, "So you want to have a second wife?" He said, "Yes." And I took all your instructions out of your books. And what he'd done, he'd gone to Srila Prabhupada's books and he'd taken everywhere where there was a reference to having more than one wife from ancient Vedic culture. And he'd written it all out and he typed it all up. And he brought every single quote where Prabhupada said something about having, you know, more than one wife. And then he put it on the desk in front of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada just looked at him and he said, "This is how you want to use my books? In other words, you want to go all through my books and take out the bits that you like and present me with a paper that tells me what I'm saying?" And then, of course, Prabhupada became slightly, shall we say, corrective. He administered him some corrective guidance, which, strange as it may sound, did not involve him marrying more than one wife. So pretty much, if it's a self-motivated desire, yes, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaridi, whether you're filled with material desires, please pray to Radha Madan Mohan. That's good too. If you have no desires, pray to Radha Madan Mohan. But especially if you have a desire to purely serve the Lord and to serve the Vaishnava community by embarking on a project like the writing of a biography of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if you have that scale of a project, then you pray to the Lord. You pray to the Lord. And if then you see a sign, the sign will come, you will see the sign, and other people will see the sign at the same time. And these are all confirmations. You get the blessings of the Vaishnavas, who are the agents of the Lord. You get the blessing from the Lord. You get inner confirmation that the sign matches your desire. So in this way, you can check whether what you want to accomplish is blessed by Krishna. And also that the Guru himself, who's a representative of Krishna, has asked you. So for those people who are not who are no longer able to ask Srila Prabhupada, then they have to be doubly, triply cautious. But this is the way that he's explaining that inspiration and blessings came to him, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. And as a result, in 1616 or thereabouts, we have the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is really the cream of the cream of the cream of the cream of Vedanta. Cream of the Vedas is Upanishads. Cream of the Upanishads is the Vedanta Sutra. Cream of the Vedanta Sutra is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the cream of the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam appears in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we're extremely fortunate to have this book. Someone asked me the other day, why did Prabhupada ask his disciples to go out to airports and sell Chaitanya Charitamrita if it was the postgraduate study of love of God? And I said, because if he hadn't done that, we wouldn't be able to even find a copy right now. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengal. There wasn't even one. He had to go to Orissa. So in the very place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, there was no Chaitanya Charitamrita. So if Prabhupada had said to us, actually, these are really esoteric books, I don't think they should be distributed to the public, they wouldn't have been in print. So Prabhupada did what he did. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is extremely important as the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And thank you for listening so patiently. I hope I haven't put you off. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Chaitanya Charita Amrita Ki Jai.